Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction? Devin Tilley here, and I am jazzed to be in studio. These are my favorite recordings when we get to bring all the global megaphone and tie it back to local relationships. Back to our roots, I would say, today. And the main message today is that we're going to convey to you is that we get an architect that I've known for a long time who is all about hospitality. I just finished reading the book Unreasonable Hospitality, and my juices are flowing all around hospitality as a lifelong learner, and we have another one of those coming into studio today. And how is this going to benefit you is that it's really having that conversation about different entrepreneurs coming together. Zeke and I are both one of those, and when we were doing the pre-interviews, it's like, huh, I didn't know you did that. And that's what these podcast threads really do, of pulling together these entrepreneurs to then understanding which developers and how you rich and you niche and you come together to make hospitality and the industries around them all work. And so we're going to be working on building and creating this guest experience to come back and figure out, as we always say on the podcast, is how do we begin with the end in mind? And it really boils down to good design. And one of the questions I'm going to ask him when we get this thing going is, you know, how do we avoid those top costly mistakes when doing building projects? And as a lot of you that are really involved in the master facilitator community, a lot of this is pointing out the obvious, but boy, the world needs a lot of that, right? And so, Zeke, it's an honor to have you in the studio today as a fellow podcaster we're going to talk about. But first, let's get to know your story through the speed round and get to know Zeke and have as much as fun as possible. All right, Zeke, what's your favorite beverage?
Awesome. Well, Devin, it's so good to be here.
You
thanks,
bet.
Thanks for inviting me in. And coffee is definitely my favorite beverage. I think you will nearly always see me with a cup of coffee, either sitting down with somebody or late night working at a desk. So
sweet, sweet. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
You know, my wife and I, we just did our first, like, away from the kids, heading to the Mediterranean this summer. And we did 2 weeks out there. I got a chance to see all the places you kind of study in school, and it was our first time on that side of the pond, but went to Rome and to Palma, Barcelona. I'd say if you get a chance to go to Barcelona, like, the architecture there is just amazing. To see some of Gaudi's work is just pretty unreal. Sagrada Familia, I don't know if you've ever been, but it is like walking into the most amazing forest that's been crystallized in stone. It's just kind of a holy place to go into. So that was really special. Yeah.
Cool. I have to chime in. I just got a weekend where we're working towards starting the conversation globally on the Art of Construction podcast and then working on your podcast you're going to talk about and tying these threads together. I just spent a weekend without all the kids, and I coach window dealers all over the country, and I hosted them this past weekend at Devil's Thumb Resort.
Oh, nice.
And it was this, like, really this, the magical, like, it's kind of those moments when you're in, and there's this picture of Ben Collins, who's been on the podcast, of, like, putting his arm out, and this rainbow came through, and, like, caught, and it's just like these moments in time. And that's why we ask those questions as we unpack to figure out, like, how do we paint the picture in shelters and real estate to be able to go in and weave those threads. And that's a cool picture you kind of just painted there for going far and near and putting all that stuff together. So anyway, what is your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction silos that we passionately break down every day here that we call the art of construction?
Yeah. You know, for the longest time, I've been a long distance runner, and that would be my go-to to say, like, I just love being out in the woods, in nature. You know, this past season, I've been injured my left foot, so I haven't been running for 6 months. And my youngest son has gotten into weightlifting, and I wouldn't have guessed that would have been what I picked up. But it's been to me, usually like these outdoor adventure things, and we snowboard and ski and bike and all of that. It's really about who do you get to spend time and connect with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my favorite sport is like really whatever my kids are into, and I get to spend time with them. So he's into weightlifting right now, so we're doing it every day. And, you know,
nothing wrong with that.
I'm loving that. You know, it's just been such a good time to watch him grow and to be a part of that. So
cool. Yeah, me too. Well, it's an honor to have you. Zeke, what is your story that led you to being the principal at Root Architecture and Development?
Oh, well, I'll give you the short story and then I'll give you the long story. You know, the short story is you go through some really hard things, and you think that you can do it better than all your bosses and everybody else around, and so you throw out the towel and you go hang your own shingle. You know, the long story is you figure out it's a lot longer path than that. And for me, I started out as a builder with my dad, and we would build homes and do projects around this lake in East Texas. And I remember hanging out with a lot of the construction guys, and a lot of those guys would always complain about the architect, about, you know, how they got to sit around in a nice shiny office while, you know, we were out here, you know, busting our tail. And I was like, well, maybe that doesn't sound like a bad idea. So and so that kind of got me heading down that path. I married really young. I eloped with my wife at 18 and 19. And I was kind of also looking for, all right, well, what's something that my father-in-law would be like, okay, this kid's going to be able to take care of his daughter. And I was like, well, architect seems professional. Seems like they make some money. So we'll start heading down that path. And through college, I just worked the whole time as a property manager. We maintained this camp, and we had a job there. And so at the camp, there was always construction and projects going on.
Yeah.
And so one of the fun things is, like, during studios, while everybody else is, you know, making paper models, like, I had, you know, new lodges and new, you know, cabins and all these things that needed to actually get built, and had, you know, a little bit of funding. And so I got to kind of design and build those, you know, during college, get some real experience.
And this was in Texas as well?
Yeah, so this was in Texas. So, okay. Yeah, grew up in East Texas, went to school at UTA, and while I was there, I was managing that camp. Our original plan was to come to Colorado, but again, we had no money, and we kind of, you know, we bought a little camper, and we were going to take that up here to Colorado. And on the way up, my dad, who managed all these camps in East Texas, said, well, I've got this one camp that needs a manager if you want to manage that. So we brought our little camper there and set that up, went to school, built out cabins and you know, basically that whole campground while we were there. Got through college and then took a job in South Texas at Lake Flato Architects, which is a real premier architecture firm. Got a chance to, you know, really work underneath some of the best. Then made the move up to Colorado because I needed to finish my grad school to get licensed. And while I was here doing my grad school, just began to work with, you know, some of the good firms here in Denver. Worked with Oz Architects, Bennett Wagner Grody, Ross Shepherd. Had a lot of great mentors. The final one was Jeff Shepherd at Ross Shepherd. And while I was in that position of I actually kind of came on as a contractor for him. You know, he offered me a job there, and I was like, well, I really want to start my own thing. And he said, that's fine. Come work as a contractor. And while I was working as a contractor, you know, he basically let me start my own firm there and kind of, if he had extra work, would support us and send it my way. And then I was doing design build. So I design a house, build a house, and then, you know, run over to Jeff's office and draw up, you know, whatever projects he had going. And Yeah, it was a good time.
Well, I really enjoyed that. So I didn't know the Rothschild. I kind of knew that back in the day, those projects, and that's mm-hmm. the end of the day, relationships are earned, not given, right? And yeah. you have to figure out that journey and find the right people, like in my intro, as you and I, true entrepreneurs, really wanting to lead a team in this whole thing. So thanks for sharing that. The next thing I want to make sure all of the Art of Construction audience hears about is your Radical Hospitality show. Tell us about your podcast, the journey of how you started that and why and what that's all about.
Yeah. So you mentioned the book Unreasonable Hospitality. I read that 3 or 4 years ago, and I was kind of going through this season where we were really trying to define what we were about at Root Architecture. And that book really resonated for multiple reasons. Mostly, it was really about this idea of whenever you do something, you know, come in and do it with excellence and treat the people that you're serving in a way that you're surprising and delighting. And, you know, and that's something that we just kind of embodied at Root is, you know, when we're asked to do a project, you know, we want to come in and we want to give them what they've asked for, but one of our ethos is always come out, you know, to always bring them what they ask for and then bring, you know, an additional idea that's creative to surprise and delight. Mm. And, you know, on the project sides, we were moving from kind of more this custom homes and townhomes really into this niche of what was really getting kind of known as like boutique hotels. And at first it was honestly like Airbnbs on steroids where, yeah. you know, developers would take over, a bed and breakfast that was like a 9-unit that they converted from a treatment facility into this really historic, beautiful bed and breakfast in Curtis Park. And then we did, the Ashler Hotel off of Tennyson and, you know, multiple of these kind of small, unique boutique hotels. And that type of project really resonated because it was really a project type that design matters. You could put in creative ideas and then see a really strong return on investment on the backside. Mm-hmm. And that's probably one of the best skills that we bring as architects. During COVID, things got a little slow, and we bought a piece of property across the street from us. And, you know, during that time, kids were staying at home. Mm-hmm. I needed a project to keep them busy. I need a project to keep me busy. And we bought this and you know, looked at, you know, multiple things to do on this. We were going to build a really big lodge on it. And as we were running numbers, we're like, well, this really doesn't make financial sense. And we started playing around with this idea of doing something really creative and unique and came up with the idea of doing this kind of Peter Nelson type treehouse, just kind of a fun, unique stay in it. And this was a cool lot because it had a lot, we could see out over it. And we live up in Indian Hills. We have really great mountain views and this lot sits down below us. And we watch a lot of the wildlife come through this lot for years. And so one of our goals on this project was to really develop something that preserved the wildlife. We knew we would have to do fire mitigation if we do construction. So that could take out a lot of the trees in there. Yeah. But by doing a treehouse and doing something that's under 500 square feet allowed us to not have to do a full mitigation plan. And so we still cleared a lot, opened it up. But put the treehouse up in the trees, and you know it's got a hot tub down below, and a really special place that kind of actually wraps around this treehouse that was my kids' treehouse. They would sneak in there when they were young on this adjacent property, and so that's still up there. Some of the boards from that, and then it's this really beautiful stay. It's got everything you need with, you know, a one bed, one bath, and a loft level. But now when you stay there, we still have all the wildlife that moves through. So I was watching yesterday, we had, big bull elk coming through. We had wild turkey coming through. And by kind of elevating it up in this woods area, just really created this magical experience. It was something that was, financially worked out really well. Experientially, is an amazing place that people can come and stay. Mm. And architecturally, you know, kind of scratch the itch of doing something fun and creative that still works. And so, you know, for us, that's what radical hospitality is. It's, you know, sometimes you can do something big and bold, and we're doing, you know, we can talk about our hotel project, and sometimes, you know, we're going to be doing big, bold things, and sometimes it's, you know, small and creative, but it's really all about, you know, how do you make those, you know, experiences for people that are memorable. And maybe that's a way that you serve your clients. You know, maybe that's places that you stay.
That's magical. So you still have this place where you could Airbnb this treehouse?
Yeah. So we still have the treehouse. We love that. My wife recently took over management on that. So we're kind of getting into the, you know, management of hospitality, which has been fun as well.
So cool. You're literally living, you know, practicing what you preach, right? And you and I have talked a little bit offline about my dream of 42 years in the making of our little, you know, golf is my passion and the whole thing of like bringing people personally down there, but then figuring out how do you become reasonable of opening up your doors to others. I knew you had your place, but I didn't know that. So we'll put links to the show notes to check that out.
Yeah.
So tell us about your journey a little bit more deeper on, you know, you had said, I grew up on job sites with my dad, and they said, let's be in the nice office to be an architect. And then learning how hard it is to work on the business and in the business to have the passions come to life, to truly have your name on a statement project like the architectural treehouse or others. But can you talk a little bit more about just your journey of becoming an architect? And maybe if you were starting over, what advice would you give others listening to this podcast?
Yeah. I mean, when I first hung my shingle, you know, a lot of what your thoughts are on you know, being an architect or really kind of any tradesperson, whether you're going to start a company as a plumber or a general contractor, is really kind of focused on the craft. And the thought that I am really good at this craft means I'm going to be really good at running this business. One of the things, if you've ever read, you know, E-Myth, is it kind of teaches us is, you know, you really have to pull back. And, you know, a lot of people come in that are good craftspeople that aren't good business owners. And you really have to reteach yourself the art of being, of running a business and learn, you know, all the components that come with that. And there's a lot of fun and joy in that, but it is different than the craft that you may have grown up in or become successful in. And so you have to learn to step back. One of the things, you know, I kind of got an eye on as I was looking to start my own company was I got some advice from Don Grody at Bennington Grody, and he's just said, you know, rainmakers always make more. So if you want to make more, go learn how to bring in projects. And I was like, okay, you know. So I got into business development and started, you know, getting out from behind the screen, which is really easy as an architect, engineer, you know, just to you know, stay behind the screen. But really learn that, you know, it's all about relationships. And I was a young man, and it's harder to break into some of these older relationships. But if you take the time to meet the people that you're at right now, eventually those people grow into positions where they're making all the decisions. And so I just started going out where I had opportunities, meeting with our engineers, meeting with you know, project types that I would be interested in. Started pitching projects on the development side, and just started just building those relationships up. Had relative little success, honestly, as a employee trying to bring in projects. It's difficult if you're not the person to be able to make decisions. But that kind of got me over myself of that fear of, you know, just talking with people and learning how to put together proposals. And so when I started my company, I started following this group called Architecture Marketing Academy, and Enoch Sears was really influential.
I've had him on the podcast way back when.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Enoch's a great guy. Yeah. He's been on our podcast, and he was a mentor of just learning how to get out and market. And so I was one of the early guys that joined that group, and you know, started learning how to, you know, build a brand, put together websites, learn how to do internet marketing, you know, back in the day.
Yep.
You know, learned how to put together newsletters and follow-ups and all those parts of the business that just aren't, you know, your typical part of running an architecture practice, but are necessary in running a business. You know, along with that, you like, you get forced into learning accounting. You know, it's super boring. But if you want to make a profitable business, you know, you need to understand a profit and loss sheet, a balance sheet. You know, one of my early like debentures into investing and financial education was, you know, Robert Kiyosaki with his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Yeah. You know, I found the content in that was more around storytelling, but it kind of scratched the niche that if you want to learn how to run a business, you need to learn about financials. And so, you know, that gave enough to just start diving in, you know, understanding how to, you know, that even though it's boring, those are the things that make a difference. So just kind of getting steered towards, here's are the things that make a difference, whether it's running a business or doing real estate development. Those pieces kind of go hand in hand.
So much gold there. I just want to chime in and be, you know, relationships are earned, not given. But if you don't go stick your neck out there, that's what so much happens, right? And and also the thing you hinted on is the first three rules of business are never run out of cash, never run out of cash, never run out of cash. But you got to understand how the game of cash is played before you jump into this stuff, right? Yep. And so that's like internal advice, like, you know, you and I are sitting here in person doing a podcast together to build our relationships and our tribes behind us. But if you and I didn't reach out to us and hosting these shows and doing these things and just sat behind the computer and expected it to happen, I hate to tell you, nothing will happen.
Nothing will happen, right?
So you have to go out and do that stuff, right? And I think that there's so much gold as entrepreneurs, architects, me as a supply chain guy of like, you just have to get out there and truly ask for the relationship. But if you don't get out there and just send an email, I think it's more important than ever right now of just, it'll automate the relationship. And that's just not how it works. And it'll never work that way.
Yeah. And we live in such a digital world, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and all these, you know, connections, and that's great. You know, it helps build a business, but it's never going to build a relationship. You know, you asked me what my favorite drink was. It was coffee because, you know, that's what's required. You know, it's a lot of cups of coffee and sitting down with people and having real conversations. You know,
yeah, you were just telling me about yesterday, and we're recording this on a Monday morning, about how, you know, your third project and how they're just really cool people and enjoying that. Folks, that's a Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So you have to meet the people, the businesses and municipalities where they are. You've kind of hovered over a few cool projects, especially the treehouse. That's magical, and we'll put in the show notes. But can you talk about that was a very intimate, smaller project. You had highlighted you've done a couple bigger projects too. Like, you know, could you talk about like the Red Hotel or a case study of one of your, you know, larger, but also still kind of boutique and meaningful of everything of all of our conversations we've had?
Yeah, maybe I'll come back to the Red Hotel a little bit later. You mentioned this weekend, I was down at Orchard Church, and we're doing a large expansion for them. It's going to be a new sanctuary, a really cool like play area for kids where moms are going to be able to come and drop their kids off, and then this, you know, really cool coffee shop. And so Mango Tree is the coffee shop expansion, and that's how we got tied into this project. You know, it'll be a $4 or $5 million project, and that was presented in front of the congregation. So that was cool. But, you know, it started with like seeds being planted years ago. First got involved in this group of that does Mango Tree coffee through my father, who was involved in a mission trip down in Guatemala. I got invited to go with him, and on that mission trip they were building a feeding center. I was like, spent a week with them building this feeding center. It's a great experience. Came back and found out the vice president of the organization, Mana Worldwide, that oversees that was based in Denver, and met with him for coffee. And, you know, and just said, hey, love what you guys are doing. If I can ever help, let me know. about a year later, they said, well, we're kind of actually looking at creating a venue that will be more evergreen in order to, we're always having to go out and raise funds for these feeding centers that we're supporting around the world. If we can create a business that can support that, you know, we think that would be a good model. And so we're looking at building out a coffee shop. Would you be interested in doing that? I was like, yeah, love to help you. So we helped them design their first coffee shop, Mango Tree, here in Inglewood. That was has turned into a real success. It's been named one of the top coffee shops in Denver. Great guys. You know, it was kind of one of those things that we put in. While we were down there, and all these things start to get connected. This last maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was involved in projects up in Evergreen and was volunteering with Young Life. And I met our current business partners, Chad and Krista Wallace. And Chad was unique because he was an architect and he loved coffee as much as I did. And that was enough to kind of connect us. But he actually owns 250 acres in the Dominican Republic. That's a big coffee farm down there. Mm. At the time, he was looking to transition out of the company he was working for. Invited him to come over to Root. He came over as a project manager, started managing projects. And we began to look at his coffee farm. What could we do to develop out a hospitality project there? And so they're producing coffee, connected him with Mango Tree. Mango Tree's roasting his coffee and serving his coffee. So all these things just start to connect. And we start working on, you know, developing out a concept to how do you create an experience at the coffee farm that's not just, that actually helps support the farmers, and people can come and experience that. So we started doing a master plan for a micro resort on that site and developed out
in Guatemala.
We're in Dominican Republic. Okay. His land is in Dominican Republic. He's located here in Colorado. And so we developed out a master plan for that and began taking that through the entitlement process in the Dominican Republic, which, you know, requires a bunch of environmental studies. And it was about a three-year process of moving that forward. And we're just now breaking ground on that. So that phase one will have five of these really cool, unique stays. They kind of look like big diamonds in their treehouse that kind of float in this little valley. So those are under construction there. So then that tied into, what could we do here in Denver? We both had a passion for hospitality, and I was really looking at the time to find some place that could be a meeting point for clients. We didn't want the traditional office. I did the whole traditional office thing. We had a nice office down in Rhino, and I wanted something that was, I could be more engaged with our family, not having to come into work all the time, not making our staff sit behind computers. We're just kind of more of a, you know, we're living in a time where things can be flexible. And totally. Our team has really developed into this kind of worldwide team where, you know, we are hiring some of the best in different locations around the world. But oftentimes it's like moms that can't go to a traditional architecture office because they can't be at a 9-to-5, but they're phenomenally talented architects. Mm. And we're giving them that flexibility kind of in our virtual team support system. And so I wanted the same for me of, I don't want to have to come into a traditional office every day. I'm giving that to our team members. So what can we create that still has a presence and a place in the community, a place that we can bring, you know, clients to and kind of showcase a little bit of the type of work that we do.
Sure.
So this idea of doing a boutique hotel was, we kind of put out there and we began to look for a piece of property. And this property in downtown Morrison, I'd watched on LoopNet come available. It went under contract. It fell out. and came back under on the market again. And we approached the owner and talked to the owner about, you know, it's not, this is a piece of property that you're asking a lot of money for. And your, you know, your rent doesn't match what you're asking for it. So, you know, from a,
the balance sheet,
balance sheet does not work. And that, and you've tried to sell it at that, and that has fallen through a couple of times. One of the things that we could do as a, architecture and hospitality group is we could take this property that's, you know, you'd like to get, you know, this amount for. It's not worth that. The market's telling you that. And we could add the value to it by doing the entitlements for a hotel. And then it makes sense for us to buy it. You get what you want. We could create that value in it so that by the time that we're buying, it's worth more than what you're asking for. And so that's good for us and our investors. And
a few cups of coffee to get that done.
Yeah, a few cups of coffee. and so we put the contract, put the property under contract contingent on taking it through the site development plan process. And so that, you know, we hoped that that we could get it through that entitlements from what we were told by the city in, you know, 6 to 8 months. 2 years later, yep. of walking it through.
That's
all
the
of
rule
that,
of thumb. Whatever you think, double it.
Double
you
it.
Really have to do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, 2 years later, we got the first hotel approved in downtown Morrison. And as we were going through this, you know, we learned, oh, this is a, you know, there's a reason why nobody else has done this. We're actually, we found out we were the third hotel group to try. We learned that we were the first new construction development to actually occur in this small town in 60 years. But all of the, you know, amazing metrics that you look for in hospitality are like there in Morrison. You have this, you know, world-renowned concert venue that has 200 concerts a year. People travel from all over the country to stay there. There is no like destination place to stay
little
when you come there.
Little place called Red Rocks.
Yeah, a little place called Red Rocks. And when you come to Red Rocks in Morrison, you know, you don't stay in Morrison. You go to Denver or Lakewood,
and
so,
it's a challenge.
Yeah. And so this is within walking distance, a long walk or a shuttle, and we'll end up having a shuttle that'll take people up to the concerts. And then, you know, Morrison also has just, you know, phenomenal biking and hiking trails. It's kind of the gateway into, you know, all things mountains. You can stay there and go to still ski. You know, we learned a lot from our treehouse project. You know, what type of guest avatar is coming there, you know, and, you know, surprisingly, like, you know, although a lot of it revolves around the concert season, you still have a good off season because people, you know, fly into Denver and it's a good first stop from Denver to still get up to the mountains. Yep. So we get skiers and, you know, Evergreen, Morrison, Kittredge are all super cute little mountain towns with great food scenes. And so we're really highlighting that, both in our Airbnb and in our boutique hotel. So that project, you know, after the 2.5 years of entitlements and permitting and raising cash, like we had never done, you know, a syndication or cash raise before. So we joined some masterminds and learned how to do that, is, you know, now like officially underway and under construction. So this last week, we started setting the CMU walls, the foundation's done, wow. All the underground. So it's super cool. If you drive through Morrison now, like we've got a great, you know, poster of, you know, here's the future. And we're working on collaborations with some of the local restaurants to have, you know, them be able to provide food service for our rooftop deck. So this thing, just to give a little overview on the hotel, you'll walk in on the ground level. It's boutique, so it's 22 units. And so we wanted to be smart about not just having a staff member sit there all day for 22 units, but we wanted to have a real guest experience. So we did want to have staffing. We love coffee. So we put in this cafe with a coffee shop and, some beer and wine. So, you know, the barista / bartender will greet you when you come in. You'll be able to get a drink, take that up to your room. There's a great hangout on the first level, another one on the second level, and then a really cool rooftop deck that'll have amazing views, kind of 180 around downtown Morrison. And then we kept a little conference room, so guests will be able to use that. We'll be able to meet clients there. We'll run podcasts out of that on the ground level. And really, that's kind of all we needed as an office. We looked at, do we build out a big office? And, you know, what we found is, you know, our clients aren't interested in that, so it's not adding value to it. Our staff wasn't interested, and I wasn't really either. So, you know, this gives like the best of both worlds, where we have a professional place to for our clients to come meet, see a project, have a cup of coffee, and it opens up for the community to be able to have a great place for, you know, them to be able to stay, you know, guests coming in from all over the world. So we're super excited. I think it's going to be a great addition to Morrison.
What a dream come true, like hearing that story of hearing kind of 10 years in 2 minutes of how you've lived this passion and so proud of you getting that together, man. It's just super cool to hear your stories of how they've all threads coming together. And at the end of the day, like when you put yourself out there, there's a chance to have it all come together, right? Like, but you have to put a lot of resources together, just like my passion project down in Westcliff. If you know me behind the scenes, there's a lot of reasons why we would be having these conversations of putting these threads and conversations together, and why I was honored to have you on The Art of Construction and people listening to The Art of Construction to be like, let's go check out that podcast, because at the end of the day, we're both entrepreneurs connecting these dots to create these things and come together. To do that, can you talk a little bit about on your website, we'll put links in there to all of these great projects and all this stuff. But you've done a great job of guiding customers through the journey of this. Talk about your free guide on your website and kind of how you do that.
Yeah. I mean, really, like you said, Devin, our people are like yourself. We're entrepreneurs. We're creators. We're creatives. And every now and again, like, we get the opportunity to come alongside that journey, you know, whether it's a guy like yourself that's creating really cool, you know, small business spaces for people to come and stay, or, you know, experiences like the golf project, or, you know, hospitality developers. And a lot, as an architect, we do probably 30 or 40 projects a year, along with entrepreneurs, and we get the opportunity to come alongside for a portion of it. But we also understand, as developers, you know, that's a portion of the project. Every project's a long-term commitment of, you know, saving money to get to the point to be able to then start a project, to dreaming about that project, to then, you know, putting that project together and putting together designs and plans, and then hiring contractors and building that contract, and then, you know, building that project out, and then the long-term maintenance of that project, you know, and making sure that it works from a sustainability standpoint. And we get to do the condensed down portion, which is really, I think, the most important process of helping people visualize or taking their visions into something they can look, feel, and touch in a three-dimensional realm that crystallizes that vision. To me, if you have a very clear vision of what you're trying to accomplish, and you're committed to it and you focus on that, there's really no reason that can't be created in the world. And the gap from that visualization to reality becomes much smaller. The difficulty is, if you're not doing that every day, and you're not seeing some of the pitfalls that may be, you know, a year or 2 years down the road, you know, building out something that the energy cost is, you know, out of whack, and it's going to be more to operate it, or the design idea, you know, may not actually produce revenue. We're having those conversations every day with our clients. So this Orchard Church, wonderful people. We met with them in the beginning, and their concept was to put the coffee shop basically in the back of the building. And I was like, well, that's great. But you told me you wanted a tenant here. And in order to run a successful coffee shop, one of the key things is like visibility. Why don't we look at, you know, other opportunities on the building and versus just adding it all, you know, your budget's here and, you know, all of this as new construction in the back is probably a little out of line. It's definitely out of line from visibility for a coffee shop to be successful. It needs to see that road traffic. Why don't we look at, you know, bringing this up forward? You have some underutilized space that we could renovate and we could reduce your new construction out. And so that high level initial consultation, we call it a feasibility study, where we're looking at those bigger pictures and we're, you know, we're bringing together their experience. You know, they are experts in knowing what operates their business. We're bringing together our experience as architects that are working with multiple entrepreneurs in primarily in the hospitality space, but also in some other, you know, areas. And we're bringing those ideas so that in the very beginning, it's easy to make those adjustments. We can move, you know, a 10,000 square foot addition from the back to the front and do some renovation, you know, in a
relatively... That's easy to do in design?
That's easy to do in that concept place. Very difficult to do under the full design and almost impossible to do with, you know, after construction.
Which I'm honored to be on your podcast and talk through, like, careful what you just... If you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
And figuring out how people will use the space. And that's hard part of, like... you know, building, owning, operating. And that's what you're in. When you do spaces like yours, you really get to put that stuff together. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really, it goes to all shelter, but you better figure out how to, is it feasible or not? And how fast we can do that. In the front,
absolutely.
Right?
And lots of times in that feasible, you know, there's a lot of things that go into feasible, you know, is it financially feasible? Is it, you know, feasible for the zoning and codes? Is it feasible in terms of, you know, the use of that space? Is it going to be a great use of space or is it a better idea? And so, you know, we do those feasibility studies as always kind of the first step. And we try to do those at, in a really reasonable cost so that, you know, both for the client that is looking at a potential project, that they are, you know, being conscientious in the beginning before they're fully committed, you know, and for us, like, we want a chance to be able to date a little bit our clients before we marry to make sure that they are the right fit for us and vice versa. And so totally. Those feasibility studies have been really helpful, instrumental to our business to, you know, package up studies on projects to spend the proper time versus just, you know, I can't tell you in the beginning, every time you get the call of, hey, can you give me a architecture and engineering fee for XYZ project? That's generally, you know, and no fault to any owner. I mean, that's what you're trying to get in your mind, but you don't know, you know, when you're asking that question, it's really the wrong question because, you know, the answer may be way over what you're asking for and it may be way under. And then, You haven't really defined what that scope of the project is or the right project. So you really need to say, let's look in and decide what this project is. Even if you think you know exactly what it is, I can guarantee nearly every feasibility study we've gone through has produced a it's almost impossible to go through that process and not produce a better initial concept, whether it's, you know, their ideas or our ideas, like to start to put some things down on paper, will produce a better concept. And it may be 180 degrees difference, it may be 2 degrees difference. But what I found is in construction, you know, 2 degrees difference when you start and you're heading to the moon is a million miles away.
Totally.
So
you don't know what you don't know, and boy, we can be jaded about what we think
yeah,
we know, right? And
yeah.
So those things are so true. As we work on closing out this conversation, the question we always ask, as this is for builders and affiliates to connect the right construction technology and products, and we talked a lot about different types of products today, but the key thing of this podcast and this kindling always has and always will be to connect to the right handshake. So, Zeke, I'm curious your take. What is your crystal ball for the future when it comes to technology and construction?
Yeah. I mean, we are diving really heavy into, I hate to say it, but AI. You know,
I think we have to say it, but now we have to figure out how the relationship is.
Yeah. You know, we're always cautious about, you know, just giving things to the tool to produce things, and recognizing that it is a tool. And so no different than when, you know, in my mind, no different when CAD went to Revit and Revit, you know, began to go into virtual reality and walkthroughs. Those are all tools. And a lot of people are worried about those tools, you know, replacing the craftsperson. And my philosophy is, you know, the people that utilize those tools will replace the people who don't. And so just understanding how to utilize those tools into your work. And so some of the things that we're doing now is just, you know, early design iterations. So that feasibility where we talked about, where I will generally produce a site plan sketch, we'll pull together inspiration images. Oftentimes now we'll just take those inspiration images and site sketch, we'll put those into ChatGPT and we'll say, you know, Chat, produce us a inspiration 3D image of that. Yep. And so, you know, we won't.
It's taking your lifelong lessons in the global market, but taking perspectives outside, then you have to meld that together. That's where we're in this journey of figuring that out.
Yeah. And so you just have to figure out how to, you know, enable your people to utilize the tools to produce better, but still, you know, be in charge to be the thinkers, not let it think for you. And take control of it. And that's really helping, you know, we work with a lot of our team that is international. And so communication is key. They may be, you know, the most intelligent, best designers, but if they can't communicate well, you know, then that doesn't get received well. So all of your emails can be ran through AI. You know, the communication, you know, that is going back and forth can, you know, be cleaned up and quicker. By not letting it write your stuff for you, but using it to tune your stuff for you, using it to design, iterate. So that's really where I think a lot of it is going, you know, is, you know, how to use AI as a tool to make, you know, better design, faster design, more efficient. And, you know, ultimately that will trickle down to, you know, to our clients creating better spaces. And that's really what this is about, is love like it. It's not just, you know, crushing through to get the next project done. Is, you know, how do we create better places where we can sit down and have a great cup of coffee, right?
Oh, so good. Well, in close out, what is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
Yeah, don't be afraid to reach out. Like you said in the beginning, you know, this is not easy to pick up the phone and reach out to those people that you want to connect with. And if you will just get over yourself, like, they want to connect as well. So, you know, be willing to get beyond the computer and, you know, the Facebook and the Instagram. You know, go make real human connections. Spend time, you know, building those relationships that are not for, you know, now, but for 10 years later. Invest in the long term.
Zeke, what an honor. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us.
Awesome. Thanks, Devin.
All right. Crush it out there, Trev.